Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Zero Dark Nerdy, the galaxy's favorite pop culture podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, betonline.ag for all your sports betting needs, Golden Ticket Cinemas with the brand new Hollywood Ale House right here in Greensboro, North Carolina, and 19 other locations across the United States, and our good friend Sailfish Comics. Three locations here in North Carolina, one in Concord, one in Winston-Salem, and our good friends on Stanley Road. We'll just go ahead and get into it. So, Karina, thank you so much for joining us today on Zero Dark Nerdy. We didn't get to meet officially, but we first saw you at New York Comic Con this past October as you were introducing Moon Man with Kid Cudi, Scott Mizcutty and company. Before we get into that, thank you for joining us and just kind of tell us a little bit about, you know, the journey from the William Morris mailroom to being just the boss that you are, president of Mad Solar, executive producer of Pearl X, and then the upcoming Maxine and all that fun stuff.
That's a wildly kind introduction. It means the world. I will say, since you were at New York Comic Con, you were at one of my kind of happiest days. That was truly for Scott, Kyle Higgins, and myself, and for Michael Bustatiel, who was on stage with us. It was very warming and validating and thrilling and exciting. And it just felt like the hope of creating something that people would care about, for that it to feel that raucous in the room. It was next to none. So I'm really touched you were there and that we got to share that first experience together, and very excited for the second. So thank you for chatting with me.
Yes.
To tell you a little bit of my, I guess, the journey story. Mm-hmm. I love an origin story too. So
that's
where I'm
that's right. That's where all good stories.
Let's go straight to the roots. So my background, I'm from LA, I'm Middle Eastern. I went to film school at Chapman, and there I studied film production. And Chapman was a particularly great experience because so much of it was almost like the process of eliminations of creativity to figure out what you're really good at and what you love. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, you write, you direct, you cinematography, editing, all of it. And I really liked the creative side of it, of writing and directing. But I found that as much endeavor as I had to put to make my thesis, which I was proud of, the producing side of it, which at that point is conversations and, yeah, hey, give me your car dealership and let a bunch of students come in and shoot for free. And that mentality, the conversationalist and connecting with people and really overseeing a vision with something that felt very organic to me. Mm. So on the heels of that feeling, I started interning at production companies. And from that, I love corporate Hollywood, but I wanted a broader experience where material everywhere for every studio, for every client was relevant.
Yeah.
And I had a former agent teach a class at Chapman. His name was Harry Eflin. He was like very 70s quintessential New York agent. And he was the one, I know, it's like very in the vibe. Yeah. He was the one who pointed me toward the agency. So right after I graduated, I started in the mailroom at WME, went through that kind of that ladder path, became an assistant, then a coordinator, then a talent agent. And my relationship with Scott started there. He and I started working together, me as his agent and him as my client, when I was at WME. And as we started to build content together in that fabric, it felt like Scott was ripe for a company. So it was quite serendipitous that Aaron Gilbert, who ran Braun, was in my office and I was expressing this to him. And I swear, as easy as that conversation goes, was he, "Well, I'll make that for you." Yeah. So we built the company out with him. And at that point, I'd left to run it. So enter Mad Solar and the 2.0 version of my life.
Oh, gosh, that's fantastic. And I got to say, like, you know, going back to what you're talking about for Comic-Con, the vibe in the room, I've been to a lot of panels. I've been to a lot of Comic-Cons. I don't know who the gentleman was who was kind of walking around the crowd, but he was getting us pumped. Like, I felt like we were getting ready for a Kid Cudi concert. And it was something where, you know, my daughter was reminding me, like, you know, every couple hours, like, hey, the panel's coming. Like, you know, we're not going to miss it. And it was great. And just to meet you and hear your story and how Moon Man came about was just fantastic. But, you know, most importantly, like I said, learning more about your story as well, coming up through the mailroom at William Morris, which I believe is the oldest, if not one of the oldest talent agencies. Yeah. Ever is absolutely fantastic. And with Mad Solar too, one of your first projects before we get into Moon Man was A Man Named Scott, the documentary. Yeah. with Kid Cudi. And I got to tell you, someone that suffers from depression and anxiety, this truly hit home for me. And just seeing how real and how open he was, and he's just one of those people to where, like, you can just tell, like, there's no lying to him. There's no faking it. And I could see, like, how you two got along. And I imagine you have a great, you know, friendship, but also partnership as well. How did that come about as far as, like, you know, okay, we're going to do this documentary. You got to let it all go. Because you see some documentaries, you can tell there's a lot of holding back. You're not really getting the full story where I felt like watching that, you're just seeing Kid Cudi open up everything to the world, the highs, the lows. And, you know, that's what people like me can relate to, because it's not always rainbows and sunshine. But at the same time, we want to know how everybody also picks himself up too.
No, I so appreciate you getting that feeling from it. The source of the documentary came from Scott. I'll say what was really interesting, though, is that I started working with Scott around October 2016, which was a couple months before he submitted himself to rehab for depression and put out that letter to his fans about what he'd been experiencing, why he's doing it, and all that he had been going through. Yeah. So the majority of the Scott I knew when he and I really grew close was this kind of post version where he was incredibly happy.
Yeah.
My relationship with him is one of just mutual creativity. At any point, I can get a call from him and there's an idea that he has. There's something that we're working on. There's like a, you know, an ever outpour. There's so much output from him. There's so much kindness from him. There's so much care and consideration. And he's never one who's waiting for others to build it on his behalf. He really has a drive and motivation himself. So what was really interesting, even kind of as an outside in viewer watching the documentary, which ends at Kids He Goes. So it ends at an early point in our relationship. Even I was astounded at how hidden his darkness was, even from his peers, how much he went through and how early he went through it. Yeah. We all hear about things like sophomore blues for artists because, you know, the first is, not to say it's easy to get discovered, but it's easy to create because you don't have any expectations. You're doing what feels authentic for you. And when it works, all of a sudden now there is expectations of an audience that you'll repeat a sound that they want to hear. And each person has a different interpretation of what that is. So it's very easy to disappoint. And it's very easy to get stuck in the mud of, you know, I'm growing and want to do something new. But even, you know, even if I try to repeat, it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm doing the right thing. Sure. But even more when I was watching his doc, to think that it was this marriage of sophomore blues and fear of fame and, you know, what he was battling with personally and emotionally and how his producers were reacting to it. There was a level of Scott that I kind of couldn't even have comprehended what he meant by those early experiences until I saw it. I will say too, I mean, Rob Alexander did an extraordinary job with the documentary. I thought he brought so much artistry to it and in the visual interpretation of Scott's mental state. But what I really also appreciated was that these other interviews were not about the subject as much as they were about the feeling, which I think Scott as an artist, he's like often described, he's your favorite artist. There's like this moment that he captured from the glitz, gold, glam version of hip hop to vulnerability. And I loved hearing other artists trying to like interpret what that meant for them and how it either shifted their own practice or inspired them or, you know, just this sort of like change that it created and opened up. So yeah, the documentary was a very, I think, cathartic experience for everybody involved.
Yeah. It's definitely about feeling. Like when I hear his music, it's like how I feel at that time. Like I remember the first time, and there's not a lot of artists there's probably maybe a handful of artists where I remember where I was when I first heard their songs. Like, yeah. I remember where I was, where I heard like Nothing But a G Thing and, you know, some monumental tracks and stuff like that. But I remember where I was when I heard Day and Night. I remember where I was when I heard the original Pursuit of Happiness. And as much as I love the remix, I love the original. But then you see him, like, I just saw a video where I think it was Coachella or whatever. He was on stage dancing to Electric Feel, is so dope. And that's one of my favorite songs, too. So I just like how he's unapologetically, however you say it.
He definitely, that's something that I really do admire about him. And I think what's been really interesting in the kind of time that we've been together is that so much of his goal is to expose how happy he is as sort of the button on, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. You know, that feeling of, guys, if as low as I was, I can feel settled in here. Just like imagine how possible that journey then becomes, which is really nice.
1,000%. 1,000%. So, you know, let's get to it. I got the ash can from Comic-Con, as well as the first issue here. Moon Man out right now. So if you have not gotten it, which I will say, Karina, I've been to every comic book store here in just North Carolina. I don't want to say all North Carolina, but at least all of them sold out. Completely sold out. Moon Man number one came out January 31st. How excited are you for this project? And what's the long-term goal for this? Is this going to be a limited series? You're going to ride this till the wheels fall off? Like, you know, of course, fill the fans in. Cause I read this with my daughter. We both got a copy being at the panel. And then, we both picked one up, obviously, when this came out. And then I actually went back to my comic book store this week, and I was like, just out of curiosity, do you have any Moon Man number ones left? And they were like, no, done. God.
the second printing should be hitting stores any moment. I think we're going to be getting into the third soon, too, because a lot of the second was even pre-sold. So I'm very happy that you grabbed one. That filled me with joy. the comic book, it's an immense amount. Like, it really hits my heart so deep seeing it and seeing it real and seeing the reactions. Cause it's something that, I mean, we were talking about anime and manga. It's something that, and for Scott, who was such a longtime comic fan, it hit the kid spot. Like, it was like, oh my God, you're doing the thing. There's something about that just felt so, you're holding it and you're reading the panels and even seeing the lettering and the, and it just is so real. It's wild.
Yeah.
But the genesis of Moon Man really started, it was a little bit reflective in Scott feeling like Black superheroes had either been exploited or you're the fourth character in Fantastic Four. And like, what does it mean to be a Black superhero? And the idea of creating this character of Moon Man, which was actually, you know, in his library first referenced in 2013 in his song, so it's something he's been sitting with for a long time, is like the counter to Mr. Rager is Moon Man. So it's a character that he's had familiarity and played with. The idea of creating him as a true superhero and doing it as a comic book really came from Scott's feeling of how authentically was I driven to see myself in characters as a kid, and that was going to the comic book stores. So for him, it's a funny kind of start, was that he went to comic book stores and the thing he fell in love with was Scud the Disposable Assassin. And that's because he read Scud as Scott Mezcudi, and he was like, oh, that one's me. So he was obsessed with that comic. And the idea with Moon Man was, wouldn't it be so amazing if you put Moon Man on a comic book store in the same way that he found Scud? A young kid could find Moon Man and have that aspirational sense of self and what the possibilities could be for me. Yeah. In order to do that, though, the kind of key to that unlocked the kingdom was Kyle Higgins. He is extraordinary. He was, my husband actually represents him. And it was like, as I was, we were first talking about Moon Man, my husband was like, put down the phone, call Kyle. Like, this is going to start and end your conversation as like simply as it began. Yeah. And Scott and I met Kyle. He has an incredible background that you know, has done all of the traditional comics from Batman to rebooting Power Rangers. But then he also created his own superhero for Image Comics, Radiant Black.
Right.
And then out the entire Massiverse for Image Comics. So it was a very kind of like organic conversation to bring this to Image, but this was the first kind of outside of the Massiverse character he was coming on to. And alongside him and Chase Conley, who designed the suits, and Igor and Marco, who did the colors and the art, and Hassan, who did the letters, and Michael, who edited it, like all of a sudden this whole team just started to umbrella under Kyle's supervision and through his relationships that really had the same goal in mind, which was not to call it the anti-golden age of like comics heroes. It's not pulling away from that, but it's really embracing if there was a superhero today in this modern age where if there's a hero and he doesn't save me, I'm therefore the victim, or he is dealing with his brother's home, all of these things, and also his own dreams and aspirations, but sort of having this thrust upon him. And what does that mean for his responsibility? And what is he supposed to do? Also being in like a world that's wrought with change and corporate greed is therefore, you know, happening at the sort of, like the defeat of the you know, common man, right. And how do these two things grapple with one another? And for something that's so kind of personal and philosophical, not clear good versus evil, what is a hero in that format? What perspective are they supposed to take, and what are they supposed to do? So those are all sort of the thematics and conversations we wanted to raise with Moon Man, and really, you know, kind of focus in on first that local hero and that grounded approach to who he is and what he can accomplish and what he's forced to deal with. And then that will obviously get bigger the more people who start to recognize that there is a hero, there is somebody with powers, and who is he and what can he do?
Yeah, love that. And I think that's definitely what I got just from the first issue, is the fact that it's not, you know, you don't have like your big bad there, but there is that corporate greed entity, which I think that we can all relate to. So, you know, it's good to, you know, we always want somebody standing up for the rest of us, right? And, you know, and I definitely get the Mr. Invincible kind of aspect to it as well, which I knew was one of his big inspirations to it. So it's great to see it come to life. Like I said, it was great to hold it in my hand as the ash can version of it, but to actually have it, you know, issue number one, I'm incredibly happy for it, and I can't wait for the rest of the world. If you do not have this comic book yet, wait. You said issue two is coming out, and then, or not issue two, but the second version and the third.
Second thing.
That's right. Now, speaking of which, are there going to be any variant covers with the second and third fittings?
Yeah. So issue one had multiple variants, including it's just a range of artists who were responsible for the variants. We're gonna follow through with that as we continue to build out the rest of the issues that'll make up the first volume. And then obviously we'll end with the trade paperback at the end of, you know, to build out volume one and then continue on from there. So we do have a long runway in terms of what we see as possible for Moon Man, because like I said, it's, you know, he's going to be thrust into from local to national to global hero, and all of the estimations of what he should accomplish are going to change as his notoriety becomes bigger, and his responsibilities therefore become bigger. So there's a lot to come.
Good. I can't wait. I don't know if he's got dibs somewhere, but we would love to call first dibs on Free Comic Book Day coming up.
We love that.
We'll fly you out here. We'll do whatever we can. First class. I'll max out my credit cards if I have to. All right. So in terms of Mad Solar, we got Maxine, the third movie coming out in the Timeless trilogy.
Yeah.
So a couple questions here. I've seen Pearl Scene X, absolutely loved it. Was this originally planned as a trilogy, and how did the, you know, kind of collaboration come with Ty West?
Yeah, so this is a really cool story, and all credit goes to Ty and then to Mia Goth also joining in the writing of Pearl for building this out and architecting it this way. Our involvement was actually wildly organic. At the outset of creating Mad Solar, Stuart gets a lot of credit. My husband represents Sam Levinson. Mm-hmm. Got to know him. Scott ended up executive producing Malcolm and Marie. So they had built a relationship, and we're, you know, it's family. So we're that kind of component of a team that was involved in the X now franchise was already aware of us and interested as X was being built out. Scott and Ty West were longtime friends because Scott had loved House of the Devil and had taken Ty out to dinner. So as Ty was creating X, he was thinking of Scott.
Yeah.
And again, outside of company, I'd spoken to A24, who I knew well from my time at WME, about who we are and what we want to do. And as I was expressing our love of horror, Scott, I will say, it's like there's a few subjects that he just like encyclopedic, and horror is one of them. Uh-huh. To the extent that when I was at WME, the only person he ever asked me to meet the entire time that we worked together was Sam Raimi. He's like, that's it. That's the one. That's wow. The guy. Yeah. We can do no better and no other. So in expressing that to A24, it was like a very interesting moment because they were about to get the script for X, and all three parties that were already involved in the project just thought, you know, Scott and Matt Solar and can right. we bring them to this? So the point that we came on to X was when the first script had come in. It was incredible. It was finished. I mean, Ty is truly a genius.
Yeah.
They went to shoot in New Zealand, and it was right as COVID was going on. And they had the 2-week quarantine before they could film. And as they were in quarantine, Ty and Mia put together the concept for Pearl. Go back to A24 and they're like, you've already flown us out here. We've got the set that we're building for X, the house, which would be the main set for Pearl. Why don't we just do both films back to back? And to A24's credit, they said yes. Wow. So the trilogy really built out of quarantine, which is kind of wild to think about. So it became Ty, who's a filmmaker who I feel like one of his biggest strengths, obviously the genre is something that he has such an affinity for, but his ability to play with time period and make it feel so nostalgic. So 100%. You're watching Pearl and you're like, this is Wizard of Oz. Like I feel this is taking me back to old Hollywood films that I've seen, but then you're slashing somebody with an axe and it's like, oh my God, combining those two things is so outrageously cool and fun to live yeah. inside of. Same as the 70s. I'm like, man, remember when like Scorsese and this and that, we're all putting out movies at the same time. Now I'm like, okay, now I've got this 70s vibe. And yeah. you know, it's like, she's got blood all over her face. It's that I think Ty is a genius with. He's a total genius with it. And Maxine, too, will play in a new time period. It'll play with kind of a new architecture in that sense and just continue to expand out what he does so well and what Mia does so well at the center of it.
Oh, so she's great. Yeah. She's great. So you got the comic book out. You got Maxine coming up. What's next for you and what's next for Mad Solar?
It's a lot, actually. It's really very exciting. I would say that Mad Solar, and not to say this was something that we sought to do in the creation of the company, but it happened pretty organically out of Scott's interest. We've brought in pretty wide and horizontal in the verticals that we're interested in. So mm-hmm. kind of as an example, you have Scott as an artist who came from music and then gets into film and TV and then, you know, calls one day and he wants to write a memoir, calls another day and he wants to do a fashion line. And, right. you know, King is organic. The comic book comes out of like another sort of pillar of his. And I think Mad Solar, then that became our specialty, was this idea of partnering with artists. We're very culture facing because that's who Scott is. He's, you know, you couldn't help but to say that he was in a constant dialogue with the kids and is very, you know, true to his form. But taking these artists who speak to culture and creating content across mediums, so whatever ends up being most organic to what they want to do. So some of the things that we're doing kind of follow the gambit. There's more in the comic book space that we want to do alongside Kyle. So that's going to be a component of all of it. There's a Fortnite experience that we're working on with a young artist. So that'll be our foray into gaming.
Okay.
There's a film we set up at Sony, which is also with Sam Levinson and the Lucas Brothers, that hopefully we're going to push through alongside a series we have at Netflix, which James Samuel will direct and Ian Edelman is show running. So that's like the film, the TV. And then another thing that's really, really really kind of stellar, exciting that we're very proud of that we're doing is that we're working with this artist, Jaron Braxton, on his feature directorial debut, which is like a very adult-facing, sonically driven monster movie that essentially we're hoping to sort of almost embrace the way that animation is done in Asia and Europe, where it's auteur-based, that at a price rather than living through a studio system, which treats it as, and we experience this on Intergalactic, just takes a long time, a lot of people, a lot of money to put it together. So essentially the indie structure of building out animation in a US format is what we're working on with this artist, which is like insanely exciting.
Lots of irons in the fire. I love it. I love it. You remind me of myself, but you have a little bit more money to play with than I do. So I have a lot of irons, just not enough fire. And the, and I was looking into this. So the movie with the look of my the Lucas Brothers, the competitive title is Hell Nah.
So this was actually Scott first brought up the idea when I represented him as his agent, and he always said, like, why don't I do a This Is the End style movie around me and my friends? I'm like, that's so smart. That's you answered all questions asked or answered just by
one,
that.
One for us minorities out here.
Right? Like, come on. Yeah. So with that, he kind of brought, and it was actually, if we're gonna go back to where it started, he'd had this idea. We just closed our deal with Braun. Kevin Turin, who works with Sam and also had a deal with Braun at that point. I spoke to him about it. And as soon as I was telling him about it, he's like, we have to bring this to Sam. Brought the idea to him. He really loved it. So he and Scott crafted the story together. Okay. And then from there, alongside, you know, the whole team involved, Kevin and Ashley and everyone, we brought the Lucas Brothers in to write it. And then, you know, before we even had an opportunity to pitch it, Sony took it off the market. And that was where it, you know, kind of landed over there. And the whole concept of it is a zombie apocalypse film at Paris Fashion Week, which is as kind of wild and crazy as it can get. We've got like, it's very death to the rich in a fun way. Everybody poking a lot of fun at themselves. And, you know, we also like joked, we're like, well, you know, one of the questions was like, okay, what's going to make these zombies different? I'm like, well, you've never seen a zombie in haute couture and high heels. Like, how do you talk in that wardrobe? So there's you know, the silly things like if the model, at one point you think the heroes are done, the zombies are on top of them, but they're model zombies. So they'll only nibble, not bite, because they don't want to take calories. It's like, you know, so it's very, very outrageous and fun. And Sony's been a wonderful partner on it. So I'm excited to see if you know, how this all develops out.
Love that. So it's kind of like Zombieland meets This Is the End, but during Paris Fashion Week.
But during Paris Fashion Week, you throw those characters.
I'm sold. So I don't even need a trailer. Don't even put out a trailer. Just put that out.
That title.
Leave everything else to the imagination. And then that way we can all go in blind and enjoy.
I know. It's Scott's got some really fun ideas.
I love it. Karina, before we wrap up, we do have some some fan questions for you. I want to get to know your pop culture thing. Going to do a little jingle here. So, you know, these are questions from the fan. Sure. I know. I love this little song here.
I'm like, I'm ready.
All right. So we got some questions from the fans. Would like to know a little bit more just about like your taste, your interest, this, that, and the other. Yeah. So the first one is, what is your favorite like go-to movie or go-to album, like whenever you're feeling down and you just need like just a little pick-me-up?
You're gonna laugh. It's very antithetical to Scott. I'm not one who goes down very often, if that makes sense. I think that's come for me. I have a really, really, really close-knit family. And there was a point for me that I realized, oh man, if I just have my family, then everything else is okay. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer in that sense, but I will say, you know, whenever I want to be, and it's going to sound so like, you know, whatever, but it's going to seem, you know. But I'll, like, lately I've been listening to a lot of Tchaikovsky. I've been going through his symphony. And you were talking about songs that you can remember when, and yeah. I remember distinctly my best friend in college playing one of his symphonies for me. And I'd been looking for it for a long time. And it turns out it was the intro to Symphony Number 3. And I just like, you know, I don't know, it like harkened this like raucous celebration uplift in me. So yeah. Right now I'm a symphony girl when I need
it. Okay.
I need my boost.
I like it. I like listening to classical when I'm working, when I need a zone. So I like that. That's a different kind of answer, and that's good.
Yeah, it's liberating. Yeah. And also on the content side, is like going back to our mutual love, which is the anime.
There you go. That's right.
That's right.
You can always go back to
any happy place.
Love it. Love it. All right. This one's a serious one here. Question number 2. Who is your favorite Ninja Turtle? You don't even have to say why, but who is your favorite Ninja Turtle? Because I really believe that everybody has at least one Ninja Turtle.
Yeah. So you took me straight. Like, this takes me straight to being a kid again. I was like trying to remember, I'm like, who did I really love when I was a kid? And I think I loved Michelangelo. I think he was my favorite. I know it's every time that I re-experience Ninja Turtles, it gives me like a whole holistic sense of nostalgia. But then something about Michelangelo just like, oh, I think you were always my guy. So that's my answer.
I mean, the nunchucks, the fact that he was like more the kid than the rest of them.
Yeah.
Even going back to the tubular and all those days, but even in like the newer versions of it, like he just seems the most relatable. You know, Leonardo serious, he's the leader. Donatello, you know, he does appeal to a lot of us nerds out there. And Ralph was the, you know, the tough guy.
But
Michelangelo was always a great blend of just all three of them.
Excellent.
There's no wrong answer to it, but I gotta give you the air horns for that one. All right. Last but definitely not least, when you're hanging out, you know, whether if you're watching a movie, you're streaming. We had this episode a couple of years ago, so I've kind of been going back to this question here because I think I want to revisit this question for another podcast episode. But what are some of your favorite just like movie snacks? Because we're trying to, you know, let people know, because this is like one of the things I get asked the most of anything else about the public. It's not so much like who's your favorite X-Men, this, any other. It's like, what's your favorite movie snack? I'm like, really? Like, that's what you got? So I thought I'd bring it back into the fold here and just see what others
engage in.
Right.
So this credit goes to my auntie Ruth. When me and my sister's a year and a half older than we have two little brothers, but when me and Tots were kids, she would always do movie nights with us. That would be also where we would see rated R movies at like the horror of my mother, who felt like PG-13 was a rating for a reason. That meant you had to be 13. It was very, very strict in those days with content. But she would take us and we'd watch Good Will Hunting, or I know we saw The Color Purple for the first time, probably too young with her. There was a lot of that fare. But her specialty, what she would make for us, is popcorn with raisinettes inside.
Okay. So
like melt inside the popcorn. That's my jam. That's my like my go-to.
You have made a lot of North Carolinians happy. Especially I have a lot of friends that they either do the raisinettes or they'll do like some combination of M&Ms and the popcorn.
Yeah.
Something that I got introduced very late in the game.
I try M&Ms with the popcorn.
It's pretty good. Like, yeah, because I'm not a fan of raisins by themselves. I only like raisinettes.
Yeah,
like understand. It's the only way they should come. Like, I wish that they were just made that way, but you know, Mother Nature. I mean, we can only so much
separate the two.
That's right. So, before we sign off here, Karina, how can people find you on social media? You know, what are some of your favorite avenues? Now, people, do not just pitch her movie ideas. This is just a, you know, follower, some likes, some comments. Don't try to blow up her spot saying that we sent you over there for movie ideas on this side.
That's so sweet. My biggest social hub is Instagram. My handle is @LionKarina, which is really taking me back to when everybody in the office used to call me Lion, and I just sort of took it on as an identity. Eventually, I'll probably have to mature that a little bit, but for today, we're still @LionKarina.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us. We'll definitely have you back on. Great things coming from Net Solar. Do go out there if you can. If you can get number one, go get it. But at least go get reissues number two and three. Moon Man out in stores now. Maxine coming out this year. Mad Solar, Karina doing fantastic things. Thank you so much for joining us, and we cannot wait to have you back.
Well, this was too kind of you. I had the best time. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
You got it. Excellent. And that's going to wrap it up for our latest episode of Zero Dark Nerdy, the galaxy's favorite pop culture podcast. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Believe Podcast Network, betonline.ag, Golden Ticket Cinemas, in particular, Hollywood Ale House right here in Greensboro, North Carolina, the old Brassfield Cinemas location, and Sailfish Comics with three locations in NC, one in Concord, one in Winston-Salem, and one right here in Greensboro on Stanley Road, right across from Best Buy. As always, feel free to check out our website, popculturepodcast.com, for all your entertainment news and notes, courtesy of our good friends over at Zibster.com. That is Zibster. And on behalf of everyone from Zero Dark Nerdy, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.
And anger management?
Fuck anger management.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.